Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for February 4th, 2024. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are coming to you just after the conclusion of NXT Vengeance Day, where the main event saw Ilya Dragunov retain his NXT title over Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes making the long-awaited turn on his former, now former, best friend. So we'll talk about that and more here on Wrestling Night in America. It's good to be with you. I want to thank Nate Lindberg and Brandon LeClaire for hosting the show last week while I was at the Royal Rumble. I was able to call in with my thoughts on that. I also talked to Wade Keller in depth on the flagship this past week for VIP members of PWTorch.com about my live Rumble thoughts and more. So you'll want to make sure to check that out if you haven't already. But here on Wrestling Night in America, we talk about the big shows in Pro Wrestling Weekly. You can catch me on social media at Greg M. Parks. I tweeted live throughout Vengeance Day tonight, and I try to tweet as much as I can during the live shows of WWE, AEW, and the other big events that we get weekly. So I'm trying to make a more concerted effort to do that. But, this was Vengeance Day. There's going to be one more show for NXT before WrestleMania, the WrestleMania weekend show. So that's going to be their really big show of the year. And I'll have NXT expert Kelly Wells along in a few minutes to join me to talk about and break down Vengeance Day. Meanwhile, if you want to join in on the conversation, you can call us up. If you're listening live, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. If you'd like to email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com, you can email us anytime throughout the week. We get to the emails each and every Sunday. We are here each and every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, pwtorchdailycast.com. So while we await Kelly's presence here on the show, let's go right to the phones. 410 area code. It's Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. Reverend Keith, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. Good to have you on so early in the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Greg. I don't know about you, but I felt that tonight's show was a little bit lackluster. It was basically a 3-4 match card because the Gacy-Dijak match and the six-person tag match really undelivered. I'm happy that they finally paid off this 2.5 to 3 month storyline and had Melo turn on Trick, because otherwise it would have definitely been an undesirable show. What are your thoughts on the overall presentation of all six matches?
I would agree with you. I think even in this new era of NXT special events that are graded a little bit on a curve because the NXT TakeOver events that came before in a previous generation of NXT were just so off the charts good. And this generation of NXT is very different in a lot of ways, and it's sort of unfair to compare the shows that we get now to those NXT TakeOver days. Even compared to the current modern NXT shows, I thought this was below what had become the standard for those events. And that's, you know, there was nothing terrible on this show. There was nothing that I would even really call bad. Dijak and Gacy may have come close, and that wasn't necessarily the match itself. I think I had more of a problem, and I, you know, shared this on social media, again, at Greg M. Parks, was more the tone of the match, where you had this hardcore killer in Dijak and this kind of goofy, almost comedy figure now that he has become in Joe Gacy, and the match sort of vacillated between that. You know, it was a violent match at times, but you also had Joe Gacy sort of running at Dijak with a trash can over his head, and so I never felt that it was like, it was just like all over the map in tone, and I don't think that helped. So that was, I think, my biggest gripe of the show. Everything else was, I would say, probably average at worst, maybe. Like it, but taken as a whole, when you don't have any real standout traits, save for the main event, I thought, you know, Trick Williams and Dragunov had a really nice main event, especially toward the end when it really picked up. But yeah, I would agree, Reverend Keith. I thought this show was lackluster, especially compared to some of the others that have come before. I'll bring Kelly Wells on now, PWTorch.com contributor. Kelly, first of all, thanks for joining me here tonight and providing some NXT-focused perspective on this show, since I know you cover it for The Torch. But Reverend Keith was talking about how underwhelming this show was as a whole. Do you agree with that assessment, or were you higher on the overall show than the both of us are?
It sounds like I was probably a little bit higher on it. I might just be in a really good mood today, as far as I can tell from looking at the responses to it. I think everybody agrees on the angle, but it seems like I'm definitely higher on the show than everybody seems to be. I would say every match delivered or over-delivered. I think what felt lackluster to me, though, is that something that this particular brand and even this whole company has been doing a lot is that they have this major show, no titles change hands, and it feels like very much status quo across the board, kind of like you didn't even have to do a PLE at all, is the best way I can put it. We get those a lot on the very special episodes, the PLE lights, as we like to call them on PWT Talks NXT. But yes, it felt inconsequential other than one big angle. And as good as well as they did the angle, we did all see that angle coming.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it was necessary. I think they had to pull the trigger here. It just had gone on so long. Certainly Carmelo got great heat out of it. We can quibble with the execution, how would we have preferred it to be handled, and so on and so forth. But I do think they needed to move the story along here with a big turn tonight, and they did do that. Reverend Keith, back to you. Anything else that you'd like to discuss specifically about the show tonight?
I also want to mention the fact that I thought it was kind of silly to have Lola Vice attempt to cash in her contract for the women's title in the midst of the women's title match. One would think she would have waited till the end of the match instead of making it a three-way, waited till the end of the match to attempt to cash in. You know, she would have had greater odds. And I saw your tweet during the show, Greg, about your analytics to see what would be the better percentage. Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. But to me, the way they booked that, it didn't make any sense. Because, number one, everybody knew Lola Vice wasn't going to get the NXT women's title. You don't want to take the title off of Lyra, because Lyra is on fire right now, especially the storyline that she has with Tatum Paxley, you know, being a quasi-bodyguard, stalker-type gimmick that always protects her. You know, you don't want to take the belt off of her right now. Plus, she can wrestle. She got the big rub from Becky last year. So you want to keep the belt on Lyra heading in to Stand and Deliver. But I just thought it was foolish to put Lola in that spot. What were your thoughts on it, other than what you already tweeted? Or Spooky Milk, welcome. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, yes, you know, sorry, Kelly. It was I don't understand it. And maybe, Kelly, you have a little more insight onto maybe what Lola Vice was thinking there. But it just was a – it was strange timing. I mean, if you're WWE and NXT booking, like, I guess I can kind of understand why you would want to put her in the match at that point where, you know, it adds an element of drama to it at the midway point. No one is expecting it. So it checks a couple of those boxes. But from the perspective of, does it make sense for this person to want to do it at this moment? that's a box that's left unchecked, I believe. And my argument on social media was sort of, well, I can, if I squint hard enough, I can kind of see why she might want to do it, because if you're doing it in the middle of a match, you have potentially a higher percentage chance of winning, because now instead of having to just pin one person to win the title, all you have to pin, you can have the option of pinning two people. So it maybe increases your odds if you look at it that way, but I don't know anyone fan who's sitting at home thinking of it that way, you know? So I think they're thinking of it like Reverend Keith is, like, what, you know, why would you insert yourself into a one-on-one match, you know, not particularly close to the end either, more in the midway point. So I thought that left a lot to be desired in the execution there, Kelly.
Yes, I'm going to call what happened a necessary evil, because I can see why they needed it to happen this way from a booking standpoint, because Lola doing this and taking this away from Roxanne at the moment she did is what gives Roxanne something to do coming out of this. It's what gives her her next step in her turn toward the dark side. So the only problem is, any way you slice it, the only answer is, well, this had to happen to move the story forward. It doesn't actually make sense for her, and it does make her look like a buffoon, because she goes in there, and yeah, she's got two bodies that she can pin, but she can also be pinned by either one of them, and she cannot factor into the finish. So I get it from the Roxy standpoint, and the only other way you can do it and get this out of and get the Roxy story out of this is if Roxy wins the championship and then Vice comes in and beats her for the championship. But you can't do that because Lola's not ready. So they kind of booked themselves into a corner, and they kind of made Lola look like a dope because they had to do what they had to do.
But,
Reverend
Keith,
yeah.
Okay,
go ahead.
I'm here. Listen. Kelly, you just said that it gives Roxy something to do. Roxy was already a heel coming into the match. So I don't understand your point about Roxy being, it gives her something to do with Lola Vice. Lola Vice is a heel and Roxanne Perez is now a heel. So I didn't understand that comment.
Well, I think that Roxanne is in a weird storyline here where she's a heel, but she doesn't know she's a heel yet. Like, the character doesn't know she's a heel yet. That is kind of the way that I've seen what's playing out. Like, we know that she's more or less gone that way, but
right.
I think her character still believes herself to be on the path of straight and narrow and the good one, the moral high ground. So that's why it still works for me so far. And, you know, ask me again in 4 weeks if they're doing this right or if it's gotten too muddy.
Okay. My third and final point before you move on, who do you think will step up next to challenge Dragunov at Roadblock, which is Tuesday, March 5th, their PLE light show on a Tuesday night? What are your thoughts on that? Thanks for taking my call. I'll let you get the other callers. I hope you guys have a good week, and if it's God's will, I'll speak to you next Sunday.
Awesome. Great to hear from you. Thanks for starting us off here, Reverend Keith, on a positive note here on Wrestling Night in America. Dragunov, the Dragunov-Trick Williams match could have gone one of two ways. It could have gone Trick Williams winning and Carmelo Hayes turning on him after the match, or it could have gone Carmelo Hayes turning on Trick Williams during the match with Dragunov retaining, or the third option is what turned out to be the case. Dragunov wins and Carmelo Hayes turns on Trick Williams after the match. So Dragunov still champion. Who does he face next? I don't know that we really got a clear picture of that here tonight in terms of when you look up and down the card, who else potentially could be a challenger to Dragunov. I don't see anyone. I don't look at any, you know, Dijak, I don't think is going to be the guy. You know, Breaker, Corbin, probably not. Especially with Breaker flirting with main roster general managers. You know, he's got potentially signing on Monday with Adam Pearce on Raw. Kelly, do you have a good sense of who's next for Dragunov? I mean, you know, they could go a rematch with Trick Williams. I guess that's not out of the question, but certainly seems like Trick and Mello is set for WrestleMania weekend.
You know, I thought it was problematic that we didn't have somebody obvious for Ilya at Stand and Deliver. And Keith brings up Roadblock, and I was not thinking about Roadblock at all. I don't think about the PLE lights, even though I just mentioned them 10 minutes ago. I don't think about these things as big turns of the calendar. I would not be surprised if Ilya had an angle there, but not a match, because that is something they've shown willingness to do on these PLE lights in the absence of having somebody in that spot. The only thing I'll say, and I'm not the first to say it, is the words they had on the screen, that thing, that five lines, the man has three faces, that is a Japanese saying. And so if you want to look into this, you want to be glass half full like me because you're a big Kazuchika Okada fan, maybe it's Okada. And if it's Okada, he's going to be on the very, very tippy top of this brand. He's not going to be eased in. He's going to be moved to the top of it. So they can kind of signal to fans that he's a big deal. So if I'm going that way, and if I choose to believe that, and I'm going to do it until I see otherwise, just because I want to, I would say that Okada might be the one at Stand and Deliver. But right now, I don't see that obvious guy. I mean, you can't get Lexus King ready for a match that big in 4 weeks unless they don't try to position it as the main event, which they could do.
You are certainly setting expectations, connection that you've made there. I'm looking at the roster right now, and I agree. I doubt he defends it at Roadblock at the TV. I think the next time he'll defend it is probably WrestleMania weekend. But I just don't – I'm not sure. Again, looking at the roster, there's no one that really jumps out at me. I mean, Ridge Holland has the main roster bona fides, and he's sort of doing a lonely man gimmick where nobody wants to help him. And, you know, I'm not sure if that's enough to get him into a match of that level. Unless they do, the only thing I can think of is, do you do Trick Williams, Carmelo Hayes at Roadblock, and then do a Trick Dragunov rematch WrestleMania weekend and have Trick win the title there?
I would say yes, except Trick and Mello seems too big for anything but Stand and Deliver. That's bigger
That's
than the
my thought too.
For either one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my thought too, but it's just, it's going to be, it might take someone from the outside, and WWE, they haven't done it as much in the recent weeks, but they have taken main roster stars, brought them to NXT. It's helped the ratings. And you wonder if, you know, the person that's going to end up challenging Dragunov next is that person on the main roster right now. Are they going to be pulled down just because they don't really have anyone ready yet for that spot? So I think that's another potential discussion point when you're talking about who's next for Ilya Dragunov. Just to reset things here a little bit, I am Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist, joined by PWTorch.com contributor Kelly Wells. And this is PW Torch Wrestling Night in America for February 4th, 2024. We're here breaking down the just-completed NXT Vengeance Day show. We have quite a few people on hold, so we're going to get right to the calls and skip over the match-by-match analysis, at least for now. I'm assuming we'll hit on some of those as we go through the calls. So let's go to the next person on hold. It is the 937 area code. 937, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey there, this is Stevie calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Hi, Stevie. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight related to Vengeance Day?
How you doing tonight?
Doing well, thank you. How are you?
Good, just enjoying the show, you know, late night, kind of a rainy night over here in Dayton tonight. And I was just enjoying listening to your show. Actually, I wanted to call in and talk about, not necessarily in relation to Vengeance Night, I wanted to talk about WrestleMania.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I miss WrestleMania, you know, when it was guys in the ring over there, you know, giving it their all, like Lou Albano and Arn Anderson, Lance Archer and Buff Bagwell, Shelton Benjamin and Big Van Vader and Matt Bloom and Dino Bravo and Tyler Breeze and Monty Brown and Brutus Beefcake and Bam Bam Bigelow and Sean Devari and Dory Dixon and
Dumas
and Epico and Fandango and Fit Finley and Katsumi Fujinamanaki and Shoichi Funaki.
Well, Stevie, certainly listed a lot of names there, and some of those not even at WrestleMania. So we'll move on to DJ from Miami. DJ, it's going to be tough to top that one. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
First responders rushing here and getting those two to HBA Florida Aventura Hospital. The driver fighting for his life.
Hello, DJ.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that.
You're on, bud.
Sorry about that. I was watching the news. All right. I got a couple things. You were talking about Bron Breakker. I feel like going into this, he could be the new Brock Lesnar, but I don't know if he's going to stay heel or babyface or go babyface. I feel like maybe they'll do something like old school and maybe him against Gunther would be good. If Gunther takes off that belt, he can go for the championship belt. Or do you think that Bron should be like a Brock Lesnar going back and forth to SmackDown and Raw?
No, I mean, I think he'll end up on one of the two brands. I think it'll probably be Raw. I do think a match with Gunther is not out of the realm of possibility. SmackDown got a couple big free agent pickups on Friday night, and I would expect Breakker to land on Raw, and that would put him in position to face Gunther. Certainly his Royal Rumble performance, whether or not you believe the scuttlebutt out there about Breakker being basically inserted into Brock Lesnar's role, the role that was meant for Brock Lesnar at the Royal Rumble, whether you believe that to be the case or not, he certainly had a strong showing in the Rumble, and you know, you would certainly want to have someone have a strong showing in the Rumble if your plan is to have them face a guy the level of Gunther at WrestleMania. So, Kelly, your take on Bron Breakker on the main roster and is facing Gunther at WrestleMania a real possibility for him?
That seems like a bit of a fast track, but it's not out of the realm of possibility because this is a guy that they have tried to fast track in a lot of ways. He is, you know, during his babyface title run, I was essentially pronouncing him dead on arrival. It was such a poor title where I'd often forget who had that championship because Carmelo was doing really interesting things as the North American champion, and Braun was doing not at all interesting things as champion. I thought that he needed just to be a heel. Just to be a heel forever. And then he turns out kind of to be one of the guys who can be a heel and then start sort of leaning tweener almost babyface with this goofy stuff he's been doing with Corbin. And now it's kind of working as a babyface. They just had to get there in a more roundabout way as I think, you know, maybe down the road they'll end up doing with Roman. But I'm way ahead of myself there, and I hope he stays heel for a very long time. But yeah, I don't see Braun as a guy who floats between Raw and SmackDown anytime soon. If he becomes that guy, if he's that guy and he's that big of a deal that you want him to do that, then by all means do that. But if they bring him up there and they start putting him on every single show, whereas everybody else is only on one or the other, there's going to be a real backlash against him, and which can work if they want him to be a heel, but I don't think that would work if he was babyface. Like you, Greg, I see him landing on Raw, absolutely.
Yeah, I think that you do bring up a good point about the positioning of Breaker, because he, I think, has really taken off as a heel in a way that, you know, he didn't as a babyface. I think he kind of plateaued as a babyface and then was re-energized in this heel run. And I think it would be a mistake to, you know, go back to square one with him, basically, on the main roster and go back to him as a babyface. And so how would that work? Braun Breaker heel against Gunther heel, or would they try to introduce Breaker as a babyface on the main roster against a heel Gunther? I don't know. I think with Lesnar versus Gunther now seemingly off the table, I do think Breaker versus Gunther is an intriguing matchup, and I'm just interested if they go that direction to see how they handle the babyface heel machinations of the two. DJ, back to you for your second question for us.
Yep, my second thing is about CM Punk. I feel like he was here for 5 minutes and he got hurt, you know, that CM Punk thing. But I feel like he should be doing commentary instead of sitting on his butt. I understand, you know, once he leaves we miss him and we're going to come back. But, you know, that once fire is over, it's like, do we want, you know, the viewers more eyes on the TV, or are we just going to lose a little viewership because he's gone? And, you know, we have, you know, Braun coming up, but nobody like CM Punk, you know, that we did get more viewers. So I feel like CM Punk should do something. I just don't see him sitting home. I feel like commentary would be great. He was a great commentary at EAW, so I don't know what else he should do.
Yeah, I mean, he was even a really good commentator in WWE when he did that for a time. And, you know, I would be all for that. You know, WWE just mixing around their commentary teams again this past week. It really depends on if that's something Punk wants to do. Does he want to do all this travel while rehabbing, by the way, and do commentary? Or does he kind of want to sit at home, do rehab on his own, not have to worry about traveling while he's rehabbing, and maybe make a surprise return at some point? Maybe that's the better option at this stage of his career. But you know, if I was Triple H and he came up to me and said, hey, I want to be a constant presence on TV, I'd like to do commentary, I don't know that I would turn him down, Kelly.
Yeah, and it certainly, I think DJ's onto something with the absence makes the heart grow fonder kind of idea, and that's kind of what was in my head. But the bottom line is whatever rehab is best for him is what they should do, because if they want to get something out of this long term, then they shouldn't jeopardize that by carting him around the country, if it's going to put him in a position to get hurt. We have seen that even while hurt, he's been dropping in on NXT and workers like that and kind of trying to help out and offer advice and things like that. All the things that are very weird to see somebody like CM Punk doing is the sort of thing that he does. I would say you've got to think long-term. If it's going to set him back at all, that is not something you can afford, given the, not just the cost of bringing him back, but the emotional cost, because there's some really, really bad blood that people are looking past in order to make this work. So you're really priced into this thing, so you don't want to play with fire and screw it up.
Right. All right, DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
My last thing is I want to walk across the street. I'm just so confused, like, with the Bucks. Like, they're acting weird. They're, like, you know, they're saying weird things. Like, no VP acts like that. You know, it's just like, I don't know what they're doing. And then the Sting thing, it's just like, I don't know what Tony's doing. I'm just so confused. Like, who's planning this, and why aren't they people saying, this shouldn't happen. It's just the weirdest thing is going on at EAW. It's like CM Punk came, everything was great, you know, like, you know, and WWE, and then all of a sudden, just EAW is just tanking when Tony said, this is their year. This is going to be, you know, first year, you know, like coming back. You know, it's, I don't see anything like that. You know, the, you know, look what happened with the other big thing. And, you know, the Devils, guys, that was horrible, and that's still horrible. It's like, I have no idea what he's doing and what's going on with anything, especially with these books.
Yeah, Kelly, I'm not sure how closely you've tracked the character change of the Young Bucks over on AEW. You know, certainly I gave my thoughts on it on the flagship with Wade Keller. I was a little more positive on the potential of it because I do think that the Young Bucks needed a refresher. They needed a change of some sort, especially, you know, if they were handpicked by Sting to face him in his retirement match. I don't think they could go in as sort of the happy-go-lucky Bucks. And, you know, they're taking advantage of the idea that people know that they are real-life executives in AEW. And, you know, playing off the anti-management sentiment, I guess, of society in general, but specifically, you know, some of AEW's own fan base who may not have appreciated how the Bucks have handled things as management so far. So any thoughts on that, Kelly?
I'm as unplugged from AEW now as I have been. The scattershot.
They have goatees now. That's the big thing you need to know. They have goatees now.
And they, you know, they flirted with those at one point. I think it's Chikara, maybe in, because I've seen a lot of their matches. I've seen a lot more of their matches outside AEW than I have in AEW, because I saw tons and tons when they were working New Japan, and I saw a lot in Chikara before that when I was in the tape trading phase of my, well, not tapes, DVD trading phase of my fandom. But yeah, I given that Sting wants them back, it does make sense. Hopefully, there's a longer term plan for that after that, and I'll try to say that without sarcasm. AEW having a long term plan because that is why I'm unplugged from the product right now.
Fair enough, DJ. Thank you so much for the phone call this week.
Please.
All right, let's take an email here, break things up a little bit. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send those emails. So this email is from Azan. It's NXT focused. He says, happy Sunday, Greg and Kelly. Question one, what do you think about Ava Raine as GM of NXT so far? And look, I don't want to be overly negative, so I'm not going to. I'm going to let my wife be overly negative because she was on screen when my wife walked in, sat on the couch, and I said, you know, that's The Rock's daughter. And she goes, oh, well, that explains why she's on TV. And I was like, huh? And she's like, she has so little stage presence and so little charisma, and I'm quoting here, by the way, that I figured she must be related to someone famous to be on TV. So even my wife, who is not exactly known for her long-term wrestling viewing and being able to spot talent from a mile away, can tell that Ava is maybe not at the level of others on the roster in terms of that presence. So, Kelly, what do you think of Ava as general manager? I will say I think it's a better role for her than being a part of Schism once.
I went to school for acting. I still do a lot of it now, some on stage, some industrial, things like that. In acting, in your first year, you have to take some classes with people who need an arts credit, but they're not in the major. And they're the absolute worst. They know it for the most part, but they got to do what they got to do. There's no charisma. There's nothing to latch on to. And 25 years older, because we're kind of jerks, my friends and I, who continued on with the program, still reference those very, very bad actors we were with. And I tell you what, if Ava had been in our class, she'd be somebody we still talked about. Because, oh, my God, she's dead on arrival. She doesn't have
she really doesn't have any aspect of wrestling down, which is so strange, but she just doesn't. And I can't, she does not look like a GM. She doesn't talk like one. She doesn't act like one. She's only got that role because she needs something to do going to keep her off TV. But she has no major future in this business.
Well, that's as cut and dried as you can put it. Certainly not going to ask for you to clarify any of those comments. Let's go back to Zahn.
Sitting on some of that for a while.
I could tell. It felt like it was like a relief off your shoulders in a way.
Yeah. I actually preferred the schism thing for her. That's how
really?
I
really okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I'll defer to you on that. You know more about acting than I do. So number two from Azan, he says, in the past, I referred to Joe Gacy as the next Dean Ambrose or Mankind. Would there be a better way for HBK to portray Joe Gacy as an iconic star? I think as an iconic star is a little bit of a stretch. I don't see Joe Gacy as the next Ambrose or Mankind. I mean, those are, you know, future Hall of Fame level folks or Hall of Fame level folks. That was my problem. We can kind of talk about Dijak versus Gacy here. That gives us an opening to do that. My problem was, and I talked about this a little earlier, the tonal shifts in the match where they wanted to be serious and do a hardcore brawl with the killer instinct of Dijak, but they also wanted to do comedy with the Legos and with the garbage can on the head of Joe Gacy charging at Dijak. And so I just think that was a miss for me more than anything else on the show. And I really think this Joe Gacy character has been a miss. We talk about Schism. I think Schism was a better gimmick for Joe Gacy than whatever this is supposed to be. And I'm not really sure what this character is supposed to be yet. I don't know if I'm not paying close enough attention or what, but is NXT not doing Joe Gacy justice by what they've given him so far, or is he not, or do you not see him at the level some people like Azan see him?
I'll tell you what, I think this is by far my favorite thing that Gacy has done. That said, healing is relatively well. I mean, the schism was really, really bad. It was very bad. Didn't do anything but hurt those involved. And I really, really love grizzled young veterans, so I still kind of hold this against them for wedging them in there when they already had something that was good enough to be on TV. But, I actually like this current version of Gacy a lot more. And as far as you trying to figure out what he is, I guess the only thing I can say there is I think there's less than meets the eye. I think he's just supposed to be crazy, and we're supposed to be going along for the ride and just saying, oh, he's
it's
crazy,
like,
and not.
I mean, is he just a chaos agent at this point? Like, I mean, is that really what it is? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm taking out of it. He's showing up in places he shouldn't be. Sitting in on commentary when he shouldn't be there. I think that he's just an agent of chaos. I don't know how sustainable that role is because somebody being an agent of chaos forever would get grating. And I don't know what the long-term shelf life of that is.
That was going to be my next question. Agent of chaos to what end? You know, what's the end game here? What's the goal for this character?
Right, because an agent of chaos isn't chasing titles. How do you get somebody into a real meaningful feud when one side of it is only in it for the yuck-yucks or something like that? And it's funny, the positions that Dijak continually finds himself in and feuds that even in victory, it's like what did it do for him? I didn't mind the match. But part of that was because they kept it relatively brief for a mid-show street fight And I thought that it exceeded expectations, because I still, in my mind, go back to the era of Joe Gacy and Schism that was essentially unwatchable. And I'm always like, okay, well, that was better than all the Schism stuff, which is a very low bar indeed.
Yeah, I guess so. When you're comparing Schism to the current character, I guess, I'm not sure there really is a victor in that debate overall. So back to Azan, his final question for us. How do you feel about the influx of NXT talent to the main roster lately? You know, we're used to seeing that around the post-WrestleMania time. But what's your take on some of the NXT talent we've seen moving up to the main roster or appearing to move up to the main roster? We saw Tiffany Stratton sign her contract on SmackDown on Friday, Bron Breakker appearing. He's probably going to be on Raw, as we mentioned. Carmelo Hayes is probably not long for NXT. I'm thinking he kind of wraps up with this Trick Williams feud. But what's been your take on that so far?
Yeah, I kind of like that they're doing this. It seems like under Vince, a lot of it was time to bring people up. So let's just bring six people up. No story, no plan. Just bring them up and see what we do with them. Just have them start trading wins and losses with people and give them nothing. And I'm glad that's not what's happening, but it seems like there's a real push to try to get something out of them. We don't know what Tiffany Stratton's ceiling is. We think it's high, but we don't know. So I'm glad they didn't just throw her out there and job her quickly in the Rumble. She went Final Five in the Rumble, which was very cool to see. So it's clear they see it too. It's been clear that they see that with the way that she was treated on NXT and being such a savant and taking to wrestling so quickly. But yeah, I think that worked out. I like these organic movements, having somebody. I also kind of like these soft entrances into the main roster. I think they're a good option for people as well if they think they're ready, but they want to test a few things, see what the reactions are. They got to be salivating for Trick Williams because they put him on, was it SmackDown or Raw? I think the SmackDown before Royal Rumble, and he got a massive ovation from a crowd that, you know, may as well just have barely known him, but he got a great, great reaction. So I think they're doing a pretty decent job with that right now, and in turn doing a pretty decent job stocking the shelves of NXT with a lot of talent that is at different stages of readiness to be featured on the product.
So back to the phones, it's the 240 area code, 240. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Good evening, gentlemen. This is Steve from Bowie, Maryland.
Hey, Steve.
This is the first time I've called to talk to you, Greg, but not necessarily the first time I've called into the show, because I've called in when Kelly's guest hosted for you and others. So
okay.
I'm glad to finally...
Wonderful. Well, it's good to hear from you.
Yeah, get to talk to you. Okay, I had been on X, and I talked about wondering what they were going to do with the title, and you all talked about how there really isn't anybody on the current roster that's really positioned to step up and be Dragunov's next challenger, so I won't repeat all of that, but it does make for an interesting conversation. And I would be also very interested if they brought in Okada, because that would be very reminiscent of how they brought in Nakamura, you know, straight into a PLE or a takeover at the time into a very high-profile match with Sami Zayn.
Yeah, and not only that, but, I mean, Dragunov versus Okada. I mean, that's a pretty interesting match stylistically,
yeah, that's
for both men. And it would be certainly a huge draw, I think, even for people who don't usually watch NXT. Now, you could make the argument, I guess, Kelly, that Okada against anyone in his first NXT match is going to be a draw, but I think there certainly would be added interest for someone the level of Dragunov, for those who know about him, to face Okada in Okada's first WWE match.
Yeah, and in addition to that, it allows Okada to show off what he does best because it's a very familiar opponent, even though he hasn't been in the ring with Dragunov, as far as I know, ever, anywhere. I don't know where that would have happened. He's going to be very familiar to him stylistically because as far as strong style goes, nobody in NXT is doing anything more strong style than he is, than Dragunov is. It's just, it's in his blood because that's what's done in the UK where he wrestled a lot of matches. It's what he does. So that's a part of what makes me such a big fan of him because I am obviously a massive fan of strong style. That's why I watch every show that New Japan puts up. So this would be, he'd be a really, really fitting first opponent to get him matriculated into the system, or first feud at any rate. And I don't think you give away, I don't think you do like Okada versus Lexus King on TV or something and throw that, oh God, that almost makes me sad in how big Okada is, how small King is compared to that. It's going to be weird for me to see an Okada in singles matches that are not a big deal. It's going to be very, very hard for me, actually, because I have not seen him in singles matches that don't mean anything. He's always in either championship matches or G1 matches. So, yeah, I'm salivating at it, but I'll try not to go off because I don't want to get myself too excited and then be slapped down when it turns out to be somebody else.
Yeah, and we also are sort of putting the cart ahead of the horse here. Okada, to our knowledge, has not signed with WWE, so this is all even speculation, not only speculating that he starts in NXT, which is not a guarantee. I mean, he could conceivably start on the main roster right away, but it's not even a lock that he signs with WWE. I think AEW is very much in that conversation, and depending upon who you ask, is probably the favorite for his services at this point. So, we're getting a little ahead of ourselves in the speculation department here, but, you know, it's all right. Steve, do you have anything else for us tonight related to NXT?
One other follow-up on the Carmelo Hayes turn. It seemed to me that there wasn't really any major miscommunication or hiccup between him and Trick in either match that would cause Melo to be, you know, super ticked off in the moment.
Yeah.
It just seemed to be a thing that was building over time. And I got the sense that Melo has this ego about him that can't allow him to not be one step above Trick in just general status. Trick can't be his equal.
Does seem like the story is Trick got bigger than Melo, and Melo got jealous. Now, if that's your story, it would seem to me that you would want to do the turn after Trick wins the title. Right, because that mm-hmm. would be the moment that Hayes realizes that Williams has truly eclipsed him in that way. Whereas here, he loses the match, and Hayes turns on him anyway. So that was kind of confusing to me if you are going with the idea that, and maybe it was just, I don't know, you know, Hayes could say something to where, you know, the crowd reaction tonight for Trick was, you know, they were never behind me that way, and maybe that's how he frames it. But Kelly, to me, I mean, the turn I think would have worked better had, and I think it would have been really more upsetting to the fans who couldn't really celebrate Trick's title win before Hayes kind of cut them off emotionally by taking him out. So that's kind of how I saw it progressing based on the story as I understand it. Do you think that would have been preferable to just having Hayes turn on Williams after the loss, or how do you see them framing that?
Yeah, I think follow-up is going to be everything here. They've got a lot of work to do between now and Tuesday to make this cogent and to make Hayes doing it in this moment make sense. I think what they're going to do is say, hey, man, I took a spear for you, and we lost to save you so I can help make you the champion.
Oh, yeah.
I went out there. I did everything I could to make you the champion, and you failed.
Yeah.
So his ego has been present all through this storyline, and I think that's what's going to keep him going. Like, I knew I was better than you, but I convinced myself that you could do this too, and you didn't. I think that's what they're going to do. It's just a really strange piece of booking. It's against what we would expect, because we would expect Trick to succeed here and then to have Carmelo steal his moment. And that's what makes sense to us. And almost to the point where you could believe that was the plan, but they started hearing Trick's response when he showed up on SmackDown and they said, let's not keep him down here any more than we have to. Like, I thought about all that, but I think that's what his follow-up will be. And if it is, I think that depending on how well Hayes delivers it, and Hayes will deliver it well, then I will buy it.
Steve, appreciate the phone call this week. Thanks for chatting with us.
Okay, not a problem. If I could just ask Kelly to make a quick comment on this breaking news that we're seeing here of Bushiroad firing the Stardom founder and what that might mean reaction.
They fired the Stardom founder?
Yeah, Rossi Ogawa is out, effective immediately.
Oh, wow. Maybe that's their way of bringing the two ever closer together, because they have – things don't happen quickly over there. Changes do not happen quickly in the Japanese scene. So anything that happens like this, even though it's like a personnel move, it really is a big deal. So maybe this is their way of bringing those closer together. Maybe it's their way of having men and women on the same cards a little bit more often, to give themselves a little bit more variety and a little bit more in the way of options, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. I like both those companies. I don't have a lot of time for Stardom. I do watch some of it, but I watch so much New Japan. It's like, where else do you fit in more wrestling? And the last time I was watching regularly was the end of Hana Kimura's life, and it really, really took a toll on me, actually. But, okay, all that aside, because I rambled on a bit, I would think that this is an opening for them to make a fresh start and bring those companies closer together. But we'll probably see once we know who's been named to that position.
I want to go back to Steve's last point about the Melo turn on Trick. And I want to ask you, does it get revealed then that Carmelo attacked Trick Williams? That he was the attacker? Because that seems to make the most sense, yet the entire argument that we've been making about the Hayes turn is it's almost like spur of the moment, right? He's the argument that was made by you was that, hey, you know, I did everything I could to help you win the title here and you blew it, so I'm going to attack you. But if he attacked him first months ago backstage, I mean, this was something that has been brewing for a long time. So how does that then fit in if, in fact, Hayes does reveal himself, or it does get revealed that he was the one who attacked Rick? How does that fit into the turn as we saw it tonight?
I have been thinking about that, too, and how it doesn't fit in super nicely unless you retcon a few things. And I think the way it can fit in is the character of Melo could be so narcissistic. He thinks he can say something like, I was trying to toughen you up. I was doing you a favor, teaching you to be ready. Something like that. I think this is what I would try to do if I was a writer tasked with putting those two scenes together and making them work in concert. I think that's the way I would try to sell it. The worst case scenario is they just don't talk about it again, and they assume that we are left to our own conclusions about it. There's still an option for that to be another person and to give Trick something to do between now
and Roadblock, although I think what they should do to really get the most out of this with Trick between now and Roadblock is to have him sell the injury and not be on TV at all. And kind of do a moment where, you know, Shawn Michaels is holding the mirror and all of a sudden we see Marty in the reflection of the mirror, something like that, a moment like that. So I hope they give Trick some time to sell the injury. But, yeah, this, I don't know. I don't envy them trying to make sense of how he got attacked.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they thread that needle. We've still got three people on hold. We've got an email we need to get to. So this is from John, and so we're going to take his topics in between each one of the phone calls. So we're going to start with his first topic, and then we'll go back to the phones, the 718 area code. You're up next. And John's first topic this week is comedy in wrestling. He says, like most fans, I have generally rolled my eyes and felt extremely embarrassed by most of WWE's attempts at comedy over the years, and when Triple H took charge officially, I had hope. The humor, in quotation marks, in WWE for a long time was generally cringy, mean-spirited, lowbrow, and even racist and sexist at times. However, I feel like Triple H's creative control is epitomized on screen with the way the humor, for the most part, has been handled. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven, in particular, are a delight. R-Truth, while it is offensive and stereotyping in certain respects, has been mostly great. Even Ludwig Kaiser and his dynamic with Vinci and wanting Gunther's approval has been quite amusing. I feel it's in large part due to the talents having conviction in their characters and having input. However, Jimmy No Yeet Uso has been quite underwhelming, and Tozawa seems to not take his life seriously and acts like a clown. I thought the comedy at the Royal Rumble was pretty effective without taking anything away from the serious action. Michael Cole losing his mind at Chelsea taking punishment was pretty funny, if I say so myself. So John's question, Kelly, is what do you think of WWE's attempt at comedy since Triple H took charge of creative, and do you notice a shift from the previous era? I mean, I think the comedy is, I guess it's better percentage-wise in terms of hits than under Vince McMahon, because the comedy was Vince's brand of humor. And that was, as John, racist and sexist at times. It was lowbrow. It was gross-out humor. The juvenile type of humor that Vince got his jollies off on. And everything was presented, even the humor on the shows, through that lens. And with that aspect being removed from the creative process, you're still seeing humor, but it's different. And it hits different, I think. And not every humor is subjective, so not every piece is going to go well, but I think, you know, R-Truth has been largely funny. I like Chelsea and Piper Niven together. They're funny. I think I like Jimmy a little better than the John does, but Kelly, how do you view the humor that we've seen creatively on WWE TV versus what we would get with Vince?
Yeah, for the most part, I have no notes here. I'm with you guys. I definitely think it's gotten better, and the percentage has been better. Comedy is very hard, and I mean, it's hard for the funniest people in the world, and for people who are, you know, meatheads who got into wrestling, it's much harder. So anytime they hit, I'm always pleased by that. And, but yes, I agree in general, and I won't linger. It certainly has gotten better.
Well, our next caller up dropped off. So we now move ahead to the 409 area code. 409, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Greg. This is Freddie from Hollywood.
Hey, Freddie. How are you tonight?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Is it okay if I talk about the Cody Rhodes storyline?
Yes. In fact, I'm a little surprised that you're the first one to bring it up, but absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm a big Cody Rhodes guy, but I'm also a big Rocks guy, too. I actually grew up, you know, on The Rock, Stone Cold, Shawn Michaels, Attitude Era, and stuff like that. So I really like them both. But, you know, overall, I love a great story, particularly a great story with a great payoff. So I've been waiting for The Rock and Roman sort of storyline and the dream match and all that. But, you know, of course, the timing and the creative, you know, needs to be right. So I was at Mania last year, and I really, really thought the story, at least the way they told it, was, you know, Cody to win. And I'd really, really expected that. And watching it live, I just knew I was going to witness that. And then, of course, it didn't happen. So I thought that was a huge mistake. But they told the story that perhaps, you know, he's going to get it this year. So, well, okay, let's follow that journey. And then, boom, it doesn't happen. So I'm just, to me, it's very frustrating. Even though I, you know, want to eventually see the Rock Romans match, it just doesn't make sense to me creatively. So I have two questions. The first question is, if they knew they were going to go Rock and Roman, why did Cody Rhodes win the Royal Rumble? Because obviously he stated he wanted to go after, you know, Roman's title at Mania to finish the story. And then the second question is, how does Rock handle all of this backlash storyline mode? If he even addresses it at all. And, yeah, those are my two questions. Thank you.
Awesome, Freddie. Thank you so much for calling in tonight. You know, Kelly, this is Freddie was very diplomatic, I think, about this situation compared to a lot of the reaction online that I've seen. To answer the first question, and it has been a question that's brought up, it seems like, if I'm reading things correctly, the decision to go with The Rock versus Roman was not finalized until after the Rumble, which is just poor timing on everybody's part, but that's when it seems to have happened. So, you know, even after winning the Rumble, I was there live at the Rumble, and Cody did some mic work after the show went off the air, heavily hinting to the fact that he would be facing Roman Reigns. I mean, so at that point, it seemed like it was Cody-Roman. And, you know, you can kind of fill in the blanks about what transpired and over the next few days that led to The Rock and WWE deciding that they needed to do The Rock versus Roman Reigns. And I agree with Freddie. Like, I don't think The Rock, Roman Reigns is bad in a vacuum. Like, I don't think that idea is bad. But when you've led fans on this journey and you've taken them right up to the cusp of that title change with Cody Rhodes, not only last year and not paying it off, and then getting to the point where he wins the Rumble again, and now you're thinking, okay, he wins the Rumble. That means he's got to challenge Reigns. That means he's got to win. And so, you know, you're leading fans to that point, and now you're doing a quick reversal. That's problematic. And so I do wonder, you know, we've seen one show, and that's I don't want to get too ahead of myself, because there are going to be many, many, many more beats to this story. So we'll see how WWE handles it, and we'll see how the journey goes. And to be quite frank, if they need to change course, because I'm assuming the crowds are not going to be happy at these live TVs about this, and if Rock is on TV, and even if Roman Reigns is on TV cutting a promo and there are We Want Cody chants, how does WWE handle that? How do Roman and The Rock handle it? That could lead to some changes. So, you know, everything I think is still – there's still a lot of things in play. Let me just say that. And I'll leave that very generally on purpose. But, Kelly, your thoughts on Cody winning the Rumble – and then not facing Roman, and then the potential backlash, not only for Roman and Rock, but for, you know, WWE fans have been very, very receptive and generous and patient with Triple H's booking since he's taken over creative. They have been on board. There's been no revolting or anything like that. This is really the first time that Triple H as head of creative may have to face strong headwinds, and it's going to be interesting to see how he reacts.
I think a lot of what's going on with Rock right now is a red herring. I almost feel unequipped to talk about it just because I don't think we're anywhere near where we're going yet. I think that...
Yeah, I agree.
Let me say that part of that is because a Rock-Roman match holds no interest for me, like none. Like a 2024 Rock versus Roman doesn't do anything for me. If 1999 Rock walked through that door, oh, hell yeah, absolutely, I'd take that match. But I was there at the Rumble in 2013 when he beat Punk, and he looked old and gassed and out of shape then. He's in movie star shape, and he should be, because he can make more money doing that and take no bumps. So that makes sense. But he does feel like an interloper in this story. And I think his presence is getting the rise out of people that it's supposed to. As far as Cody goes, let me say that I think that fans have been doing themselves a disservice for a while overthinking that he was going to beat Roman last year. I actually was surprised that people were surprised that Roman beat Cody last year. I thought there was a 0% chance of that. And I thought that for months. I know I said it on your show. I said it on mine many times. Even though it's a PWT show, you kind of couldn't not talk about it because it was just so pervasive. And I talked about it with Wade. People would say, why does it seem like Cody doesn't have any obvious challengers for when he wins? And I said, oh, he's not winning, so don't worry about it. Like, he's not winning that match. He's not part of, like, he says finish the story, but the Roman story is not his story. That's a bloodline story. Now it's a different time because the bloodline has mostly crumbled, and now you can do Cody and Roman and have it be a Cody story. I thought a year ago you couldn't end this title reign without having it come out of the bloodline in some way, but now that we're so far removed from the glory days of the bloodline, I guess, as it were, it wouldn't be a bad thing if it was Cody. But I think they're in a tough spot with Cody because they'd love to have him go for that Raw championship. But I think that a lot of fans will be upset if it's anything but Cody beating Roman, which is so weird to me because to me, they exist in two different worlds. And I feel like they should be the two champions of the whatever. I think that we're going to see a lot of twists and turns with Rock. I wouldn't even 100% bet on a Rock match at Mania at all. This is a really, really big guess on my part. Like, I'm showing my whole booty here. But I wouldn't be surprised if this was just part of a bigger story. You could use Rock and his frustration not getting this match in kayfabe to cost Cody Rhodes the match. But how many times can Cody Rhodes lose and maintain goodwill and when it's on a stage as big as WrestleMania? Roman walks out of this WrestleMania with the championship. I do. But maybe that's just because he hasn't lost in so long, I can't picture it anymore.
There's also the thought that they want him to break Hogan's longevity record, which is a terrible reason to keep the title on someone. You know, you could be missing out on someone hitting on someone when they're hot. And there's not a hotter babyface right now than Cody Rhodes. I mean, we've seen that based on the reaction of the fans. Is it overboard? Probably. But they're super unhappy that he's not getting this opportunity. And so, you know, I think that's a really crummy reason to extend an already laborious title reign. I mean, we've seen with the Rumble match, or I'm sorry, his title defense at the Rumble, they're out of ideas, like, for Roman Reigns' title matches. And you want to extend this until, what, September? Just so he can break this fictional record? Like, I just think that's stupid.
I would hope they're not thinking about that at all. But we know that they do. Or at least we know that Vince did. Because he had the New Day break a record that was like the modern record from Demolition and then lose it like full of days later. They made a point to have Nikki Bella beat AJ Lee's record for, you know, pettiness's sake and have her lose days later, because like it wasn't in the cards for her to be champion anymore, but they wanted that record on somebody else. Wrestling's a very petty business.
and they could be doing that
yeah.
on purpose. And if it's to take something away from Hogan, believe me, I'm all for it.
Well, I mean, it would
no
be
fan.
It would be one thing if
but
Hogan was in. Yeah, I mean, it would be one thing though if Hogan was like persona non grata with WWE and they wanted to get the record off of him so they don't have to talk about him. But I mean, he just did a video package for the Royal Rumble. I mean, this is a guy
yeah.
who they're not really afraid to bring back, even with all his baggage.
Yeah, and you never even know which response you're going to get from the fans. He co-hosted WrestleMania a few years ago and got booed every time he spoke. And then at the Rumble, he got cheered. I don't understand wrestling fans at all, and I've been one for 35 years.
Depends on the location and the crowd. I mean, that, Tampa was kind of his stomping grounds where he lives, so maybe those fans are more receptive to him. I don't know. But yeah, I mean, this is going to be something we're going to be talking about here on Wrestling Night in America for the entire lead up to WrestleMania. So I don't want to waste too much breath talking about it right now when we know, we're literally one show into the build to this match, I guess. So before we go back to the phones, let's go back to John's email. His second topic was Okada in WWE and WWE's use of Japanese talent. He says, I've never been a New Japan viewer, but I always hear great things about Kazuchika Okada. I know he's impeccable in the ring, but would WWE be a good fit? They certainly have been booking Japanese talent very well recently, and deservedly so. Nakamura, Io Sky, Kairi Sane, and Asuka in particular have been tremendous, and that makes me think Okada fits right in, but I don't have a lot of experience watching him. So his question, how would you describe Okada to someone not particularly familiar with him, and how would you use him in WWE? Kelly, this question has your name written all over it, so I'm going to lay out and let you take this one.
It sure does. I will try to be brief. I will almost certainly fail. So Okada is one of my favorite wrestlers ever. I adore what he does. He is... When he's not the champion in New Japan, it makes me feel like something's off, and I want him to be champion. That's kind of how I felt most of the time there, even though I in general, have loved what they've done with the title over the years, even away from him. Let me say this. As much as I love him and the fact that I only really watch New Japan and WWE, I'm not sure on paper he's a good fit at all. Okada's character is relatively soft-spoken after he wins a main event, but he's a stoic, workman-like, business-like, overwhelming champion. That's what he is. And the fact that he can kind of tower over people is kind of a big thing there, but WWE is home, it's the land of the giants, and he'll be another kind of big guy, and he's lean in the way that, like, he's kind of lean and rangy. He's what Walter looked like other than the gut, because Okada's got no gut, before Walter, I'm saying Walter again, before Gunther got totally jacked. So he's more rangy and things like that. I love his matches. I've probably never seen one I disliked. He's had to do comedy every now and then because in the G1 he'll have to face Toru Yano or whatever. But he doesn't strike me as somebody on paper who fits really well. So there's going to be a lot of work that needs to be done to make him palatable to American audiences. I don't know how strong his English is. I know he can speak it because I've heard it in very, very short snippets. But I don't know if he learned what he had to say that day or if he's very handy with the language. I should probably know that, but I don't. You should not worry that he'll be able to have very good matches, but how he will fit in as a personality is going to be very weird to see, because the Okada that I know, who just comes in, does his business, and is stoic, that's not really perfect for American weekly episodic TV.
it's going to be a very, very difficult transition for him, whereas Nakamura came in and he was bonkers. He's a weirdo. Like, he was super goofy over there, and he's super goofy here. So he fit in just fine. Going to need an identity that allows him to be him, but allows him to be WWE also.
I think that's a very good way of putting it. And again, we're of course, speculating. Okada has not, to our knowledge, signed with WWE, but, you know, it's fun to consider the possibilities just in case it does happen. So let's go back to the phones. The 231 area code is next, 231. Oh, welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello? Hello?
Hello? Hello?
Hey, this is Vasily Zverkov calling from Maryland.
Hi.
Yeah.
What's on your mind tonight?
I wanted to talk about Dragunov. I'm actually a Russian American, and you know, growing up where I grew up, you know, there's not too many wrestling fans in general, but myself being such a wrestling fan, I was following Dragunov from the beginning, and I wanted. You know, when he defeated Thatcher over there, I was actually in the west side of the ring in the front row. I was wearing a red hat. I don't know if you remember that fight when he defeated Thatcher.
No, I can't say that I have that level of photographic memory, but I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. I was over there, and, you know, after he defeated Thatcher, I actually started talking to him in Russian because I'm fluent in Russian, and I said, Nastarovya. Отличный job, dizabilimu, and basically what that means is great, you know, great job. You defeated the opponent, and let's go out. I'll buy some drinks for you, you know. And he agreed, you know, us both being Russians. I told him, let's go to the bar. I'll buy you some food. I'll buy you some drinks. In Russian culture, it's actually disrespectful to not accept the hospitality of somebody. You know, kind of offering you to buy food and drinks. You can't not eat or drink in the hospice of, you know, another fellow Russian. So we went out and we were walking to the bar not too far from the arena where it was held at. And, you know, I want to say, man, Dragunov is just a straight up killer. You know, I don't know who really is a threat to this guy. You know, he just has that look in his eyes, man. You know, he's just a straight-up killer. You know, we were walking to the bar. It was a place called Finley's Pub, a couple blocks away from where the fight took place. And I saw there a little squirrel scurried across the street, and I saw him pick up the squirrel, and he started face-fucking it.
Well, always interesting calls here on Wrestling Night in America when we go late. So, Kelly, next topic from John was on Judgment Day. He says, as alluded to earlier, I feel inserting R-Truth into the storyline has provided some funny moments. However, I don't think it's necessarily in the best interest of Judgment Day for this to continue much longer. The big bad faction that kicks ass is now kindly asking R-Truth to leave them alone, and Damian Priest actually gets a kick out of the guy and doesn't want to hurt his feelings. JD McDonagh is losing his mind and is backed up by Dominic Mysterio, and Finn is amused by the whole thing, and Rhea Ripley is mostly preoccupied with her own issues, namely Nia Jax, while still trying to keep them on track. While it has been interesting seeing how the various members react to R-Truth, and Damian Priest in particular has been wonderful in tolerating him and also showing his disdain for JD whilst also trying to become a leader of Judgment Day, I think it is maybe about time they move on and dominate Raw again or move their separate ways. Rhea and Damian look like they're about to turn babyface fairly imminently, and Finn seems somewhere between babyface and heel, with Dominic and JD the only clear heels right now. Question, what are your assessments of Judgment Day right now, and where do you think they will go? I do kind of wonder if they've sort of run their course as a group. I wouldn't be surprised if after WrestleMania they disband, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they stay together. And, you know, if they have some sort of post-WrestleMania, you know, brand split, you could have another faction come over for them to feud with in a fresh way. Do you get the sense that Judgment Day is at all stale? Do you think that maybe WrestleMania season will kick things up a notch for them?
I think that anytime you have a faction that lasts this long, you're going to have peaks and valleys, and they've got to do things to keep that fresh comedy character. Then you can kind of get away with it because you've done your share of comedy with a guy like Dominic Mysterio being in the group. You've gotten away with that quite a bit. So I think that what they're doing right now is extending the storyline for Judgment Day. I will say that they'll know when they have to end it because all good factions come to an end, some sooner than others. But I feel like the plan is not to end it. I feel like the plan is to get some more mileage out of these bumps in the road for the group before we see how that group shakes up. But I wouldn't be against one or two of the members leaving and the faction carrying on in another way. I know this company doesn't always do that. They usually just do a clean break, but in, you know, New Japan and elsewhere, they, you know, guys drop in and drop out of factions all the time. So I don't think it's overly stale yet. It's not as hot as it was because they came in and they felt stale upon their arrival. And then they got hot and were one of the best things about the show. So now they're kind of in a slightly down period, but I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of positive ahead for them and a lot of things they can still do with this faction before calling it quits.
And finally, John's reaction to Rock versus Roman Reigns. He says, I'm not excited for the championship match, to be honest, despite the fact that The Rock is my favorite WWE superstar of all time. The premise of Cody stepping aside while essentially saying the World Heavyweight title is second tier compared to Roman's title felt quite absurd. I don't dislike the match, but just Cody giving up his shot felt odd, and Rock using his influence to get the WrestleMania main event match for the championship. It also felt like bigfooting. If this was non-title and for head of the table and Cody picked Roman, who's in two matches over two nights, after nearly 2 years of trying to finish his story by winning Roman's title, then I'd be all for it, as The Rock is an incredible addition to WrestleMania and makes it feel more special. The main issue is, for me, is it's not believable Rock will win the championship, and if he does, it would be a terrible booking decision. Question, what did you think of the idea of Cody stepping aside and how it was done? And is The Rock at risk of getting booed? I think he is. I think if you did this, my initial impression was I thought you almost had to do it in a way that Cody signed off on it. Because if it was just, I don't know, if it was just Cody choosing Seth and The Rock then facing Reigns, I'm not sure how the fans would have reacted to that, but you know, I think that the explanation that Cody had of, I want, you know, someone's going to take something more than a title from you, and that being the head of the family, I think that was almost okay as an explanation, even though obviously fans have not bought it and they're not happy about it. I could kind of see the reasoning behind it, but it's just all gotten so lost in the sauce here that it almost doesn't matter what the explanation was. It doesn't matter that Cody, the character, decide and The Rock, you know, whispered sweet nothings into his ear as a thank you and you know, whatever like that. It doesn't matter that any of that happened because the fact that Cody isn't facing Reigns is the big issue. It's not, you know, fans would, there would have been no scenario where, or no reasoning given where Cody not facing Roman was acceptable to this audience. And I think that's the main issue that's going to be hard for WWE to overcome from a storytelling point of view. I just don't think there's going to be anything, any story that they tell, and maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they could have a Rock-Roman confrontation that just blows people out of the water and completely turns them into fans of this match. But I just have a hard time seeing that happening.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen, and I'm sure you have, the idea of them doing a Bret Hart and Lex Luger thing where Rock faces him night one and then Cody faces him night two. There's so much left here. Again, I can't say anything but what I said last time, which is I feel like we're underqualified to talk about this when everything is probably going to be very, very different in a week. I just hope that whatever they're planning, they continue to listen to the fans, and because they're going to have to toe the line between yanking people's heartstrings and actually pulling the rug out from under them. So, yes, it's a precarious position.
Well, we'll finish up here by running down the rest of the NXT Vengeance Day card. We talked about a lot of what happened on the show, but just to run down things, Bron Breakker and Baron Corbin did win the Dusty Cup over Hayes and Trick Williams in the opener. Bron Breakker pinned Carmelo Hayes. You know, to me, I know that Carmelo Hayes is someone that those in WWE are high on, but I kind of thought that he was like the third most impressive wrestler in this match, which is not really an impressive place to be for someone at Carmelo Hayes's push level. And any thoughts on that or the match itself? Kelly, are you there?
Oh, sorry. I was mute. The opener was a little bit of a problem for me because I was having issues with my computer. So I didn't see like the whole first half of it, which was kind of a bummer. I thought it was kind of fun how it came full circle that the very first one of these was 8-9 years ago, and it came down to Corbin in a wacky tag with another big dude who does the spear, like they were just thrown together and they went to the finals and they lost. So he made up for it all these years later. Unfortunately, Rhino has yet to come back and win his Dusty Cup, but yeah, I'm interested to see how they follow up with this because Corbin's not really an NXT guy and Breakker doesn't feel like he's going to be an NXT guy much longer. So where do they go with these two guys on NXT TV? And were they just a couple of meat puppets that had to be there to help Trick and Mello tell their story? I think that kind of is more likely.
We had the Dijak over Gacy. We talked about that one. The family defeated Out the Mud. That would be Bronco Nima, Lucian Price, and Jada Parker. It was a 3-on-3, 6-person mixed tag match. OTM, I'm more impressed with them every time I see them out there. And I think that they have main roster potential. Still early in their run, certainly in NXT. But any thoughts on that? And the family, Tony D'Angelo, Sex, and Rizzo going over in that one.
Yeah, I think if you're not going to do OTM versus the family again for the tag team championship, then you might as well have them lose again here and then kind of move on and both do their separate things. I don't know if that's the plan, but I think you might as well do that and get people to where they're headed. I too like OTM a lot more every time they're out there. I really, Jada Parker stood out to me a lot as I did the recaps of all the first round of the women's breakout tournament. She's somebody that I was really afraid was going to be underutilized because they had her do a job in the first round, and she was just, in my eyes, so much better in so many ways than just about anybody in the tournament. So when they introduced her as part of that faction, I was very happy, and I was pretty happy with what she did in the match tonight. I will say, I really like Adriana Rizzo on the mic. She's got a long way to go in the ring. She had a Fez press that was pretty ugly, and she had some ground and pound, and the punches showed a lot of light. They were pretty rough. She's going to need to do some work there, but hopefully they can get her somewhere there because I really like where she is on a character level. As a match, perfectly decent 6-person face in peril. It worked for me.
Talked about the women's match. Valkyria, I just want to talk about her because we kind of focus on Lola Vice and her mid-match decision to cash in her contract. But, you know, Valkyria was someone who, before she became champion, was not really a major part of the NXT women's division. So I kind of shot a side eye at the decision to put the belt on her, and I'm thinking, you know, how's this going to go? Is this going to be just a half-hearted attempt or something like that? But the way she's been pushed, especially with the win over Becky Lynch, like, I've been really impressed with how they've presented her and how really she has improved and how her standing has improved by becoming champion.
Yeah, and this has been kind of a diesel engine championship reign because it started kind of slow, and now there's a lot more going on with the Valkyria storyline. She is somebody that stood out to me on NXT UK in the waning days of that, as that particular brand was kind of wrapping up when she was still Aoife Valkyrie, which is a name I still prefer until I were Valkyria, but whatever. And I still like what she's doing out there, and I really like the crazed fan, the single white female they're doing with Tatum Paxley, for anybody who's old enough, who's as old as we are and actually knows that reference. But, yeah, I think that I just really like the way this was booked in giving everybody a lot of things to do. Again, we talked about the necessary evil of having Lola look like a dope out there. But yeah, I like what Lyra's doing as champ more every time out there, and I like where they took all these stories today.
Yeah. And then the semi-main event, Oba Femi defeating Dragon Lee to retain the NXT North American Championship. If you're someone of Oba Femi's experience level who has maybe two dozen matches in front of crowds and you have your first PLE, you could do worse for an opponent than Dragon Lee. Like, they seem to be setting Oba Femi up for success as much as possible. So if you want a name to watch in 2024 in NXT, Oba Femi seems like the guy.
Yeah, I mean, Shawn Michaels was a bump machine, so he knows when an opponent needs a bump machine in order to really do what they do best. And Dragon Lee is that guy. So it's weird that Dragon Lee's whole gimmick has been guy who replaces injured people kind of for a while now. Hopefully they've got him figured into something bigger, and hopefully he's going to stay on the main roster now and he'll have something interesting to do. But I think that he did wonders for Oba Femi. Now, follow-up will be interesting. Like, I don't want to see Oba Femi versus Lexus King right now. I think they both need to be helped through a match, and that could go sideways in a hurry. But yeah, Oba's just so cool, and he's so terrifying, and he's got the kind of presence that you just wish you could wake up and have if you're in the arts, if you're a performer at all, just to have that kind of presence standing in front of people and just existing. And so I thought this was a very good big versus small, and hopefully they got other opponents lined up to allow Oba to do what he does best.
Well, Kelly, I appreciate you hopping on here late on a Sunday night with me to talk NXT Vengeance Day. I know that Nate and Kevin Catani are recording as well, a recap, so make sure to check out their thoughts on Vengeance Day as well. Kelly, before I let you go, you know the routine. Let people know your work for The Torch and where they can follow you on social media.
For The Torch, I do NXT, a whole lot of NXT, PWT Talks NXT, and NXT 8 years back for VIP subscribers. That one's fun to do. We talk movies there also, in addition to the shows from 8 years ago. I also do a lot of the coverage of the G1. Every time the G1 season comes around in New Japan. And so love doing that as well. I'm a G1, a New Japan completist. So find me on socials at Spooky Milk. That's who I am. I'm Kelly Wells.
All right. Thank you, Kelly. Appreciate it.
I love being here.
We love having you. And don't forget, you can find us each and every week, 8 p.m. Eastern, here on pwtorchdailycast.com. We take your phone calls and emails, so be sure to join us and participate. Love having that listener participation. It's what makes the show, it's the engine to this show. And so we always love hearing from you. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. You can find me on social media at Greg M. Parks. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. And until next time, if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.